You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. Caroline, I had an awful realisation this morning that I didn't send any Christmas cards, but then I managed to find myself an excuse that because of the postal strikes, that they'd moved all of the last posting dates so early, particularly for overseas cards, that actually I missed it weeks ago.
My card, to be honest, this year, and I have gone back to deciding to do a Christmas card. It's going to end up being a New Year's card.
Yeah, I think that's fine. It's very continental of you. Banane, everyone.
Perhaps not, though, given that today is the ambulance strike and the health crisis for the NHS is getting deeper and deeper, frankly. 25,000 paramedics and ambulance crews are out on strike, first time in 30 years.
Yeah, NHS bosses are saying they can't guarantee the safety of patients. Ministers telling people to avoid any risky activities.
Yeah, don't drink too much. Don't play energetic sports. Pretty tricky message to give to the public. The Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, though, has doubled down this morning when he was speaking to the media on refusing actually to negotiate when it comes to pay for workers.
Yeah, and that's reiterating the line we heard from the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, when he spoke to MPs yesterday. We've been discussing this with our opinion columnist, Therese Raphael, and our UK correspondent, Lizzie Burden, about this year and the challenges ahead.
Well, Rishi Sunak was testifying before the Parliamentary Liaison Committee yesterday for the first time, and it was the same argument that he has been making all summer in the leadership campaign. He says inflation is public enemy number one. It's making everyone poorer, not just the strikers. So getting it down is how he's going to respond to the strikes, and giving in to the unions would only add to the problem. So he's deferring to the independent pay review bodies. The nurses say, though, that those bodies aren't fully independent because they operate within the parameters set by the government. And we've just had this morning public borrowing figures from the Office for National Statistics, £22 billion in November. It's the highest monthly level on record. Because of inflation and high interest rates, it's the highest level of debt servicing costs on record as well. So the government is arguing that if you pay nurses more, it will add to that figure or take away from funding for frontline services, even if you'd take more taxes and that would soften the blow.
Yeah, absolutely. Therese, I want to bring you in on this point. I mean, sitting here in London, it really does feel like this is a long-term issue around the NHS that is coming home to roost. And you say that actually the seeds of this issue date back at least to Boris Johnson. Is this wave of strikes sort of something a bit inevitable because of the long-term trends?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's, you know, that's why there's no quick fix for it. It's that combination of soaring inflation, which we're now seeing maybe taper off a bit, but it's that combination of soaring inflation and labor unrest that puts the government in such a difficult position. But, you know, beneath these questions of immediate wage increases, there are really deep structural problems that will make this very hard to solve. So within the NHS, for some time, and you know, far predating Boris Johnson, Britain has a problem of, you know, effectively what's called a second-rate service run on a sort of third-rate budget. So in terms of numbers of hospital beds, number of scanners, you know, doctors and nurses, the system has been under enormous strain for some time. And one of the big problems that they government has promised to solve and not been able to solve is a lack of a social care system. It's underfunded, it's fragmented. And because of that, you have hospital beds that remain taken by people that should be released into the social care system. Because of that, you have emergency rooms that are overcrowded because they cannot find beds for those that have been admitted to ward. That has backed up into the forecourts of hospitals where ambulances can't decant patients into the emergency rooms, into the A&Es. And because of that, ambulances can't go and, you know, meet the demand for new emergencies. And that has created, you know, these awful statistics we've been hearing for many months now of increased wait times for ambulances, increased wait times in A&E, you know, shortages of beds. So the problem is really structural. The answer is going to be, to some extent, more money, but it's not going to solve it. They're going to have to find, they're going to have to find solutions that effectively create system change, which is, you know, funding the social care sector, finding ways for that to integrate better with the NHS. So, you know, this is a much bigger issue than just questions over pay. And I think that's what's going to endure through 2023. These aren't the kind of levels of strikes we saw in the 1926 general strike or even in the winter of discontent. But, you know, there's no real sign that they're going to go away because the underlying problems are so significant.
Lizzie, Simon French from Panmure Gordon was in studio with us yesterday, and he said this is not a question of affordability. It's simply a question of political choices. What is the government's economic argument? Does it hold up?
Well, yeah, this is a crucial moment for Rishi Sunak to show that he can do both the politics and the economics, that he's not just a chancellor, he's now the prime minister. And it doesn't seem that he knows how strikes work. They go on until there's a negotiation. You can't just stonewall the unions. You don't have to give them exactly what they want, but you do have to meet somewhere in the middle. And if you look back at history, you know, in 1974, the strikes went on so long that they dominated the election. When the Conservatives asked the country who governs, the country said, not you. And so Rishi Sunak runs the risk that that happens again in 2024 if he doesn't find a solution. The nurses have said, unless you negotiate, then we're going to plan more strikes in January. And so we spoke to Charles Goodhart, the former Bank of England policymaker. He said it might not just be a winter of discontent, it could be a year of discontent. So it's very important for Rishi Sunak's authority that he finds an end to this. But as I say, the economic argument that he keeps on returning to is that he wants to bring down inflation, and giving into the unions won't help that.
Yeah, and yet the language is so tough. It sounds so Thatcherite, doesn't it? And yet there are few comparisons really historically that you can make, Therese. But Stephen Barclay talking about the unions making a conscious choice to inflict harm on patients. That's quite strong language. You know, it is a fight with the unions, sort of some kind of Thatcher cosplay. Is there any parallel that we can draw?
Well, that's clearly what the government is hoping in terms of getting the public on side. I'm not sure that's working at all. I mean, one poll I saw from GB News said Brits are in favor of strike action taking place in the UK. I think there's a lot of sympathy, particularly for the nurses. So, you know, I think we have to separate out the transport unions and the RMT. But I think for the nurses strike, there is a tremendous amount of public sympathy still. And so the government takes a big risk by sort of betting that the public will, you know, back it to try to break the back of the unions as Thatcher did. I think those times have moved on. Britain is not nearly as unionized as it once was. There are many more laws in place that restrict strike action. I mean, that said, the government does have some tools it could try to wield out. It may pass legislation to minimize strike disruption. A number of other countries have that in critical services. But, you know, as Lizzie says, as we've been saying all along, this is not going to sort of end things. It will take a negotiation. Since Rishi Sunak has sort of dug in and said that, you know, this isn't the government's position to negotiate, that they're taking their cues from the pay board, they'll have to find a way to try to bridge that gap. But I also think that this puts the onus back on the government to try to come up with a plan for economic growth and for productivity improvements, because ultimately, if they can't unlock growth in the UK economy, they're stuck in this situation where they're constantly having to find budget to appease the unions, and there's no real way out of this. So it comes back again to unlocking economic growth, and there's just we haven't really seen a vision for that.
And I'd just say that there's one way out of this. Therese, you point to the difference in popularity between the nurses and the rail strikers, for example. What the government could do is divide and conquer, give one-off cost of living bonuses to different sectors. But Rishi Sunak's spokesman has even poured cold water on that, so we're yet to find a way out.
Although I'm afraid I will take objection to the issue that somehow train drivers, yes, they do get paid significantly more than nurses. That's the bottom line. But actually, the government also has a long-running issue with transportation, in the sense that it is a massive problem. It was hit by the pandemic. It needs a complete systematic rethink in the way many people say the NHS does, that the government has not done. So I think there are some similarities between the two camps as well, it has to be said.
But in terms of public support, the Prime Minister and Boris Johnson before him stood on that doorstep of number 10 Downing Street and clapped the nurses. So is it a surprise now that the public's with them when they want higher pay?
So that was our UK correspondent Lizzie Burden and our opinion columnist Therese Raphael talking to us about the difficulties facing this government. They are sticking to the idea that they're not going to negotiate on pay with NHS workers. Can they really do that into the new year?
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Everyone I know has a horrible cough or flu, and parents have been particularly skittish in the playground in the last few weeks, even though it's obviously the Christmas holidays now, given the outbreak of scarlet fever, which is caused by strep A. And we learned today that the outbreak's actually been a lot bigger than we thought previously.
According to new data from the UK Health Security Agency, in England and Wales last week, there were more than 9,000 cases of scarlet fever, which is generally mild but can cause sore throats and rashes.
Well, these cases are actually a lot higher than normal because, of course, all of the lockdowns really suppressed cases over the last couple of years. So with so many people unwell with winter coughs and colds and bugs, I got in Bloomberg senior pharmaceutical analyst and director of research for EMEA, Sam Fazeli, to talk about whether this is just a bad flu season, whether it's actually COVID, and what about getting a COVID booster? What does the data actually show?
You can't tell if it's COVID or flu. I mean, once somebody, God forbid, ends up in the hospital, that can be done. You could test for flu, you could test for RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, you can test for coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2. But remember, we had other coronaviruses too.
Yes.
Before, that some of them were bad. OC43 is one that does put people into hospital. So I would say that for the hospitalizations, we need to run with what people are testing and also making sure that they are actually have a respiratory disease, i.e. when they're going to hospital, you take a test, you're positive, but you've broken your leg. You don't count as a positive person, that you're there for respiratory disease. When you look at that, of course, we do see a significant spike. And it was predicted, I think, in terms of certainly from the flu aspect. And because for about 3 years, we haven't had flu. So those who would have had it, perhaps a mild infection and then prevented the hospitalization, didn't have it. So I think that's what's going on.
Okay, so it's just that lack of socialization for so long, yeah, over such a long period. And so then a thought about vaccines in Europe, about dealing with COVID. So, you know, we have for quite a long time now abandoned restrictions. Europe has stopped restrictions. What about vaccines and the need for them, the usefulness of them going forwards for COVID?
Yeah, so just touching on one point, actually, that we forgot to talk about with regards to China. They have billions of doses of vaccine available in China. They only need about 100 million to get to their target. So whatever they do there won't affect the availability of vaccine elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And in Europe, I'm still waiting to be convinced that the bivalent shot that everybody's being given and offered actually makes a difference to the average person.
Hmm.
I'm just about to put out a note looking at the updated hospitalization data in the UK, which do a good analysis. The Health Security Agency does a good analysis. And from the CDC in the US, two sets of data. They all, or three of them, make a very fundamental mistake. Is that the comparator arm, i.e. I had the bivalent, you're my comparator who didn't have it, includes anybody who had two, three, or four shots. I need to know what it's like against people who were properly boosted. Because I was, most people were. What we really need is to dissect out the people who only had two shots, because we know two shots wasn't enough. So when you show effectiveness of a vaccine against that group, you do need to tell people what their risk was if they had been the good people who went and got their booster.
Right.
And not the good people. I mean, everybody's a good person. I'm not judging people here, right? Or who could not get a booster, only had two shots. Without that data, this is meaningless. And in fact, if you look at it, what I see is evidence that those are the folks who are responsible for making the bivalent booster look like it's doing a significant benefit in hospitalization prevention. So,
but you're dubious about whether it's working effectively or not?
I'm really not convinced that people who had their three shots, and some had four, remember the spring booster in the UK and in the US, are going to get much benefit unless they're in a group who are highly at risk. I mean, definitely. I'm a massive pro-vaccine, as you know.
Yes.
For years, right? The point is, do we need this booster shot for the general public? And I don't think they have data that proves it.
So that was Bloomberg senior pharmaceutical analyst and director of research for EMEA, Sam Fazeli, speaking to me about, yes, getting that COVID booster. You really do need it.
Well, amid so much doom and gloom, it was a nice surprise to find that business confidence actually rose at the fastest rate in 20 months in December. That's according to a survey of British firms by Lloyds Bank. And although the reading remains well below levels seen a year ago, consumers are showing signs, though, that they are cracking a bit. Official retail sales figures have tumbled in recent weeks. But our opinion columnist, Andrea Felstead, says the strikes and the recent snow won't ruin Christmas. And Andrea's with us now. Please, Andrea, give us reasons to be optimistic about this season.
Well, notwithstanding what we've just heard about with everybody being ill, this is the first Christmas for 3 years when the economy is open. And, you know, we haven't, you know, touch wood, got a COVID outbreak. There are no restrictions on movement. This time last year, we just Omicron was just emerging. So there will naturally be more movement, more going out, more seeing friends and family. So that should give a boost to Christmas, all things being equal.
So go on then. Have you been out on Oxford Street? Have you taken the temperature of London's biggest shopping street? Or is kind of working from home, does that mean that we're all shopping local or not shopping at all?
I haven't been out as much as usual because I've had the flu that everybody's had. So I haven't taken the temperature as much as usual. But I did pop to TK Maxx's today to pick up an online order in the city, and it was absolutely packed. I have never seen that store so busy.
Wow. People scrambling to get in those last minute purchases.
It has been. I did go to Oxford Street kind of on one of the weekends before Christmas. I mean, there aren't that many shops left to shop in Oxford Street to begin with, because so many of them have closed. But there were crowds out and there were people spending money there. I wonder about the cold snap, Andrea. Does that really help or does it hinder retailers? Are we all rushing out and buying scarves?
Yes, we are. It's very mixed. When the snow arrives, people can't get out. So that is not good for footfall. When you know snow is coming, that's very good for supermarkets because we tend to stock up on essentials. This time round, the snow was a little bit, I would say, more unexpected than in the past. Normally there's a long sort of run in, snow's
warning,
coming.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we didn't have too much, so they probably didn't get as much of a build up to the snow as expected. Now, the other thing about it is I'm told fashion sales were very good last week because we have had a very warm autumn and retailers did have too many coats, boots, scarves, gloves. They all sold well last week because of that cold snap. So that should help to clear some of the backlog. Many of them may have been discounted, though, because as they had too many, we're moving, you know, we've moved into the Christmas party season. So they may well have discounted some of that early autumn goods. Notwithstanding, it was a good week for fashion sales.
OK, let's think about the year as a whole, though. I mean, to my mind, it's kind of incredible. We've gone from the pandemic, which was such a massive challenge, to then almost immediately a cost of living crisis, the energy crisis, the inflation issue. The challenges for this year for retailers have been really huge.
They have, yet the most remarkable thing is things haven't fallen off a cliff yet. The last round of results we had from the retailers, they were all saying things are holding up. Nothing's really changed that much yet. You know, the warm autumn meant we didn't have to put our heating on. That's helped with energy bills. We had the government support for energy bills. We've got a little bit more of that coming. So really, the pain has been deferred. It hasn't disappeared.
What about the outlook then for next year? Are things going to get more difficult then as we see that those bigger bills kicking in?
They definitely are. So January is always a really lean time. You've got the credit card bills from Christmas coming in. And this year, I don't think Christmas will be too bad. I think, you know, when times are tough, you know, we want to protect Christmas. We want to have a really good Christmas. So that might have meant a little bit of overspending at Christmas. Holidays are still in demand. Some people may have gone away for Christmas because obviously they couldn't in past years. That means those credit card bills will hit in January. Plus, we've all had to put our heating on over the last weeks. The heating bills will hit in January as well, the higher heating bills. Plus the mortgage issue of your borrowers rolling off of fixed rates onto higher rates will build as the year goes on. So I think next year is looking very challenging indeed.
Okay, the UK situation versus other countries versus Europe, is it going to remain as tough?
I think UK and Europe will be very tough. I think much tougher than the US consumer. There's a lot made about pressure on the US consumer, but they are coming out of inflation. Inflation seems to have peaked there. I don't think it's peaked here. We have got this energy crisis, which, you know, the US isn't suffering. Yeah, they've got a bit of their bills going up, their rent going up, but they haven't, in mortgage rates going up, but they haven't got the same energy crisis. Plus, particularly in continental Europe, the Ukraine situation feels much closer. So the energy crisis, which is not just a UK phenomenon, plus that sort of proximity to the war, I think will weigh on Europe and the UK.
Okay, Andrea Falstead, our opinion columnist, thank you so much for talking us through that situation facing consumers here in the UK and abroad as well. Interesting to get that take at this time, which is, of course, usually so busy for retailers. So great to get your take on that. That is it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you usually listen.
Now, this episode was produced by James Wilcock and John Wasserman, and Mufal Hussain were on sound. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.